Welcome to Behind the Podium, a podcast series brought to you by Fusion Learning Partners that lets you hear what speakers are saying before or after the podium mic is turned on. Join me, your host, Jasper Appleton, to find out what makes these speakers tick and find out new insights on topics that matter to you on each episode of Behind the Podium. Welcome back to the Behind the Podium podcast. I'm your host, Jasper Appleton, and with me today is Dr. Jonathan Reichenthal. Dr. Reichenthal has been named as one of the top 100 CIOs in the world and is this year's GovIT Leadership Summit and Symposium keynote. Dr. Reichenthal, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, Jasper. Looking forward to this.
Yeah. And here on Behind the Podium, we like to do a little bit of a deep dive on our guest background and why their work drives them to speak. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about what you do and what brings you to the summit this fall?
Well, I try to do things that matter. You know, this is what drives me every single day. I'm very lucky and I get to choose a lot of my projects and initiatives. I have my own business. So as people contact me and ask, can I help them with their IT strategy, you know, for their city, or, you know, to try to evaluate the impact of AI on their community or how the agency can use AI, for example. You know, this is where I can bring to bear some of my skills and experiences. And I want to do those projects that, you know, have good, positive social impact. In addition to that, I'm an educator. I mean, that's really who I am at heart. If I look back at my about 30-year career, whether I was a CIO for a media company or a consultant at a big professional services firm, you know, I was always in a mode of course, number one, learning myself. I'm a lifelong learner, but also helping others and helping others through teaching. So today, I work for a number of universities as an adjunct professor, primarily the University of San Francisco and also the a small private college in a place called Menlo Park here in Northern California called Menlo College. And I also like to write. I write for Forbes, but also write books. During COVID and up until today, starting in COVID, I should say, I started writing my first books, and I've written 7 books since then on the topics of cities, data, blockchain and crypto, and some children's books. So I do that. Now, finally, to get to the heart of your question, what brings me to this incredible event coming up here in the later part of 24. I do a lot of keynote speaking. I go around the world. I'm very fortunate, very, very lucky and fortunate to be invited to speak at events in all corners of the planet. And I'm on the road a lot, sharing my personal experiences, my 30-year career, sharing insights on topics that I research, and not only am I an academic, but I'm a practitioner. So I'm sharing also the academic side of things, the research side, but also the realities of what's going on today with tech and cities and also the broader economy. So I was thrilled to be invited to speak at this this major event, this longest running tech event for GovTech in the U.S., very large this year because they're combining 2 organizations now. And I'm excited to help them kick off the event through my keynote. And I'll also participate in some panels and some other activities too. So it's a real thrill for me. And that's what gets me there.
Yeah, man. I mean, just doing my research on you, it seems like you're a very esteemed and established man. But I want to talk a little bit about your literary aspirations with the books you've written as well. And just the children's books, because I think those are, in my opinion, you know, a little bit more important. Mm-hmm. You have Exploring Cities, Bedtime Rhymes, as well as Exploring Smart Cities activity book for kids. Why is it important to get young kids interested in appreciating their local cities?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for that. Well, I wrote my first book with a publisher, with Wiley Publishing, called Smart Cities for Dummies. Now, it's not for dummies. Everybody, I think, appreciates the Dummies brand. Yeah. By the way, it's the largest reference series ever published, 250 million books in all sorts of categories. I only have a small amount of those, of course. But I wrote the first one, half of it before COVID and half of it during COVID, and was released in 2020. The book has been an enormous success. I mean, many people tell me it's their go-to, and it's sort of the Bible on, the smart city movement. It's a comprehensive book, A to Z of everything. And it's still, by the way, I look at the sales, and it still sells extremely well every month. So I'm very, very happy
Amazing.
with it. I perused through it recently, and it's still current.
Yeah, like it
At some
still
point,
hits. Amazing.
yeah, some point I'll probably have to do a revision. But for right now, it's very, very applicable and actionable for all sorts of stakeholders. So when I wrote it, I sent it to several of my friends, and the family members, as one does as a new author.
Right.
And I called up one of my friends, and I said, it was a few weeks had passed, and I said, what do you think of the book? And he said, well, actually, I have to be honest with you, I haven't read it yet. I said, oh, okay, what happened? He said, well, it came in the mail, and I took it out, whatever, and I put it on the counter, and my kids have taken it, and they're reading it. And I said, okay, that's interesting. I wasn't expecting that. Yeah, they love it, apparently. They love it. I mean, the book has a lot of stuff about, the Roman aqueducts, and it has about, cities with horses. What was it like when there was just horses, and a lot of history about cities, how they came to be, and also sort of futuristic stuff about the future of cities, where cities may be going. So that was the first time I heard that. Then, a few weeks later, I talked to another friend, and he said, oh, I read it, and my children read it too, and they loved it. And this happened a few times, and I got thinking, wow, children are interested in this topic if you make it engaging and entertaining. Now, at the same time, a terrific guy from Sacramento here in California reached out to me. I mean, talk about serendipity. And he said he's a children's book author. And he said, would I be interested in writing a children's book about cities? And I said, well, that's funny you should call
The
me.
timing, yeah.
In the last sort of few months, I've been getting a lot of feedback that kids like this topic. So anyway, we ended up collaborating and writing this activity book together, which also, by the way, has done very, very well. Sold all over the world. I've had a chance to give it out to kids in New Zealand and in Europe, and see lots of people enjoying it. And kids really do dig it. I mean, here's a couple of reasons why. Number one, look, the topics are really relevant, right? Topics about transportation, topics about energy, about waste, recycling, water, clean water, clean air. These are not sort of obscure, abstract, on the periphery topics. These are core life topics. Our kids are engaged. Our kids are hear stuff, and they want to learn, and they want to have a voice. I learned that, by the way, when I ran the world's largest outdoor hackathon back in Palo Alto back in the early 2010s. And I went to the high schools, and I said, we'd love for you to be involved. And I went to the met with the with the with the kids. And the universal feedback I got at the time was, we've never ever been asked to be part of anything in the city. We've never been asked for a decision or thoughts on the city. Now, that's Palo Alto. My guess, this is all over the world. Are children and teenagers engaged in their communities, in a way, for example, that they can sort of even just have a voice, have a way to express? Yeah. So this all validates this topic that kids are very interested in their cities and in their communities. They're very interested in these topics. And if you present them in a very fun way, like games, which we have a lot of games in the book, and activities, things that they can do in the book, like join the dots or coloring stuff, but also stuff they can do like in the car when they're with their parents, whatever, they can count things or try to find things, and really get them thinking about the world in which they live. And the feedback has been tremendous from children. I mean, one of the great joys of my life is to see a kid break open the book, lie on the floor with a pencil, a pen, whatever, and just spend ages there, really immersed, not on their phone surfing YouTube videos, but actually learning about the world and using their brain and being really excited about it, and bringing that to school. By the way, one more thing I wanted to say, which is really key to this question. We developed it alongside teachers. So we actually we did have a small set of teachers who became part of our advisory group for the book. And so we used a lot of techniques that are contemporary ways in which kids learn. So the age group is from 3 to 12, just to help people understand. So yeah, I mean, this goes back to my first point to you in this conversation today. which was that my at the
At
core
heart.
of who I am, I'm an educator, and so writing a kid's book is true to that.
Yeah, you took my circle back right out of my mouth, man. I was gonna say that right next, but yeah, I think you're spot on too in what you said that kids these days, I think they care a lot more. And I think given the opportunity to show how much they care, especially from adults, I think that's where that disconnect is lying, where I think a lot of the people who maybe are seeing this younger generation come up, and learning, a lot from the internet and through social media and things like that. I don't think it's necessarily, dulling their admiration to learn. Like, they're still inspired to go out and to figure out what's, what can I do? What can I do to make my community better? And I think that we just need more opportunities to really get those kids involved. And I think they have a huge change coming up in this fourth industrial revolution. It definitely seems like we're heading towards the unknown again. As a pioneer of that unknown, in your opinion, what are the biggest challenges and opportunities of this fourth industrial revolution, and how can state and local governments best prepare and respond?
Thank you for that. There's so much truth to this. Revolutions are big deals. When you look at the first, second, and third industrial revolutions spanning the last approximately 300 years, they reshaped the world. Each one completely changed the human experience, how we live, work, and play. And this third industrial revolution, the information age, starting in the 1950s, producing computers and electronics, the internet, and now Zoom and podcasts, right? All fundamentally changed how we do things as humans and how we live. And now we have the evidence that we're entering a fourth, which, because of the nature of technology and globalization, will be much more impactful and significant than anything that's gone before. So the fourth industrial revolution really is the intersection of the digital world, the physical world, and often people say the biological world too. I super focus on the physical and the digital. Things like autonomous driving, that's a nice characterization of a world in which you're using not only great engineering, mechanical engineering, but also computer engineering to totally change the game how we move people and products, and will change the our urban landscape entirely over the next few decades. But the fourth industrial revolution is not just about the intersection of the digital, physical, and biological worlds. It's also about massive demographic changes. Big economies seeing low birth rates and dropping populations. Other places, like we see in parts of Africa and in well, primarily in parts of Africa, actually, rapidly growing populations. We see things like migrations of millions of people in ways we haven't seen at all. The fourth industrial revolution is about a period of time where the humans are impacting the climate of the planet, which, as we sit here right now doing this podcast, we see record-breaking heat around the world, which just isn't the topic about, well, it'll be hot for a few days and that's it. We see people suffering and we see death and we see increased natural disasters, bigger hurricanes, more frequent hurricanes, longer lasting droughts, rain that doesn't stop and floods significantly, right? It is a topic that spans from the technological right through to the big macro trends, and these are defining, the next 100 years or so. And I don't try to predict beyond that because it's actually impossible, and even like more so now than ever before because of the rate of change. Now throw into the mix something like artificial intelligence, and it's been a year and a half since, for example, generative artificial intelligence came out. And I bet your listeners and yourself, you do something a little different today than you did a year and a half ago. I know I do, whether it's creating some element of content or getting content edited or creating images or getting, a co-pilot to help me solve a problem or use an application. That's just going to accelerate and expand significantly. We'll likely all have, our own personal digital assistants that are part of our lives, that are with us all the time. And that changes fundamentally that core part of the human experience. And finally, getting back to this idea of, how might kids be impacted? And then I think the last part was, how should our cities prepare? I mean, for thinking about our younger populations and what they're headed into, no doubt it's going to be unpredictable. It's going to be disruptive. We're not sure what people will do, what will be the jobs, or how will jobs evolve. What will be the definition of human work? I think that's an important question that will get answered and needs to be answered sooner than later. And you can imagine if I spend some time here, we could list a lot of different things. For city leaders and technologists in cities, this is a time for understanding the issues. So a lot of my time is spent educating city leaders and helping them put together plans to respond. Like, what should a city do today relative to AI? And you could ask, like, for example, how should it use tools in a way that's useful for the community? You might ask how what should be done to protect cities as AI becomes more create some potential challenges, either internally or from the outside. Cities need to think about what will city planning look like as we move to not only autonomous vehicles, but alternative transportation like light rail and bicycles and other forms of transportation. How can cities use digitalization in general to improve their performance, improve the community experience, lower costs, reduce errors? Or if it's not about reducing cost alone, can it be about using the limited, revenue that a city has in more effective ways? Not having to have any or much having much less wastage, if you like, be
Right.
more optimal about that. And then I suppose just because of the limited time we have, there probably is no greater player in the climate crisis than cities.
Then, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about, today we're approaching 70% of all humans live in cities. That number will get to about 80% by the end of this century. Cities produce enormous amounts of carbon, whether it's through factories or transportation or buildings and other things. Taking steps in our communities to, for example, migrate to non-carbon energy, to reduce, the need for carbon-based transportation, to use different materials in building, to actually even limit the reason for people to move large distances.
Right.
Carlos Marino's thesis that, cities can be effective by creating, 15-minute communities where whatever you need is 15 minutes from you. Do you really have to drive an hour and a half to your dentist, or
Right.
an hour to get your pants shortened or lengthened, whatever it is? They have a city leaders have a disproportionate role to play in the future of the planet.
No, I absolutely agree. I think especially with the leaning in, like you said as well, with AI, I know that also takes a significant amount of more energy to, keep up and running as well. So
Right.
seeing how that contributes in as we lean heavier into that will be interesting. But I know we're short on time, but I do want to circle back. You
Sure.
know, we referenced a little bit earlier, but I want to talk about your company, Human Future, as well, and the inspiration behind that journey, and what's the impact, and what does that future look like for Human Future?
Yeah. Well, people ask me, what is my company Human Future about? And my tongue-in-cheek answer is it's about our human future, and what can we do to make that a more positive human future. Clearly, if anyone knows me, or you might know a little bit about me through this short podcast today, I take a innovation slash technological lens to a lot of the ways I think about our solutions. Technology has moved into the center, from the periphery to the center of every organization. Every business today is a technology business, whether they like it or not. And how can we optimize for that? How can we ensure that, we can produce, good quality products and services at the right cost, but also with less impact to the planet, more environmentally friendly, less toxic to humans, less toxic, production in our factories, more respectful of humans. Unfortunately, still today, too many people work in conditions that are not optimum, not appropriate. Figuring out what the right balance is, where more people can have a better quality of life, a good mix between their work and their leisure time. These are all things that I think about, and I think about how technology can be a positive force and all of that. So I created Human Future as a platform for me and my colleagues, usually just partners. I don't plan to have a big workforce, at least not today, but instead to partner with really smart people, to work with cities a lot, and also with private organizations to use technology for a better future. That's really the why I created this platform. A big piece of it is education, because first of all, that's where one of my big strengths are, is I can bring insight to the right people. What most of my customers and colleagues would say, I think, about my education is I'm able to take very complicated topics and explain them in ways that most people can understand, if not everybody, including kids, by the way.
I'd agree with that. I would have to agree.
So if you're a company or a city struggling with, what do autonomous vehicles mean to your future, or what might be the role of AI in your cybersecurity work? I might be the person who can come in and help with that, help you understand it, help, bring about a plan to actually make it happen. And in some cases, I'll actually do the work too. I'll bring in my partners to actually do the action. So it's not just about talk and planning, but also about getting results. And so stepping back just one little bit, what I would just say is, I'm very lucky that work comes, to my business. I have a lot of inbound requests, but I turn down a lot. And the reason is because I only want to work on things, first of all, that really matter. I believe that all of us should work on things that matter and that are meaningful, as best we can. So I only want to work on stuff that really matters, in a positive way to humans and the planet and to our communities. And so I turned down a lot because I want to make sure that, there's probably others that would do some of that other more straightforward work. I want to do the more complicated, more interesting, more positive, human-related work. And so that's it. The final point I would just say is, if all of us can make change, actually, all of us. One of the ways that we do that in democracy is by voting, right? So that's an obvious one. Half the world is voting this year, which is amazing. It's very unique. But the other way which we all can, in fact, play a role is in our purchasing choices, in what we buy. And every single day that you buy something, whether it's in a restaurant or in a store, online or in a retail place, every time you do that, you're voting for the future you want.
Interesting.
And so that's a way that we can each play a role. So what I try to do is, not only do I believe that in the decisions I make as best I can, I also want to put my money where it makes a difference. That means social investing, like social good investing. So companies will come to me, startups in Silicon Valley, and actually several around the world that I work with, and they have an idea. They need to raise money, or they need someone to help them. If it is a social good business, going to positively impact the world, I'm interested. And in some occasions, I will invest time or money, and sometimes both, by the way, time and money. So that's the third component of Human Future, is me putting my money where my mouth is.
Amazing. Well, that's all the questions that I have for you. And like the great Sean Evans says, there's nothing else to do but roll out the red carpet for you. So if you got anything that you'd like to plug coming down the line, now's your time, doctor.
That's right. Well, I tried to plug a few things during our time today in a respectful way. I think if people are interested in anything I've spoken about today, and we, I mean, to your credit, Jasper, we covered a lot today,
We
even in a
did.
short time. I thank you for that. Go to my website, Reichenthal. So it's my last name, Reichenthal.com. So it's easy, Reichenthal.com. So first of all, that's my homepage. That's how you get to all my stuff. But if you want to go specifically to a lot of the things I mentioned today, my books, my videos, my education and workshops and all that, just do /learn, LEARN, like learn. So Reichenthal.com/learn. I think you'll be happy to visit that. And yeah, sure, there's stuff you can buy, but there's much more stuff that's free. Like the quantity of stuff that I give away is off the charts. So enjoy all the free stuff. And if you like something like maybe the Smart Cities for Dummies or the kids book to buy, I'd be very grateful, and so would the kid you bought the book for. So yeah, that's my plug.
Awesome. Once again, thank you so much, Dr. Reichenthal, for joining me today. Be sure to check him out at the Gov IT Summit and Symposium happening November 19th through the 21st. The link for more information can be found on our website. Thank you once again for enjoying the conversation and for stopping by on the episode.
Thank you, Jasper. It was awesome.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Podium, a podcast series brought to you by Fusion Learning Partners. Visit our website, fusionlp.org, for the full lineup of podcasts and for all the exciting events we have coming up.